You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Start our little sports segment, Donald. You know the trouble with you is, Donald, if I could...
I've got a multitude of problems, according to you. So keep going. Just keep trotting them out each segment.
We've just spoken to the king, Ben Fordham, and do you know what? Because you're so unemotional that when people give you praise, you immediately lapse into the... being impertinent and abuse them because you think that you don't want any sort of fluffy things said about you, so you don't take praise kindly. He was saying he was a fan of yours, and you were saying, cut that crap and stop the diarrhea. Don, please, he's a respected and revered guest, and we're trying to get his missus on side too, by the way. When I say on
Jody side. Spears.
We want her to listen to us.
What does she think she sees in him? She's a university graduate.
Yeah.
What are you snorting for?
It's
a quandary, isn't it? Like, she's educated. She's educated.
Why don't you think he is?
Well...
He went to St. Pius.
Where? St. Pius what?
St. Pius what?
What? He went to St. Pius?
Catholic school, didn't he?
He's a left footer.
Well, he's a Catholic, Donald, yes.
Yeah, left footer.
A big C Catholic.
Yeah, left footer.
Well, that's right. So what do you don't think he's done?
He didn't go to university. He walked a shortcut on the way home, but he wouldn't have attended university, and she's...
So what does it mean if you go to university? What does that mean?
Well, you've got a superior intellect.
No, you haven't. That is
Have you got a retentive memory?
What a ridiculous superior intellect. That is just nonsense. Many people with a high IQ are the most dumbest people in the world.
In certain areas,
I agree with you.
Right.
I'm talking about certain areas.
Okay, but I agree with you that our education system... is set up for those with retentive memories. When you've got to sit for an exam, you've got to remember what happened 3 months ago, and if you've got a retentive memory, you're able to regurgitate pass an exam.
So if you're a barrister or a lawyer and you're standing up in court defending your client, you're saying if you've got a good retentive memory about what you learnt 3 years ago, that will get your client off. It's thinking on your feet and having the knowledge and the wherewithal to put it out there in words while you're thinking about what you're saying, making credible sense, which is what you don't do. You make no credible sense at all.
And what has this got to do with sport?
Well, I'll tell you why, what it's got to do with sport. It's got nothing to do with sport, but I was just continuing on from our guest. Now, I want you to tell me this. Why hasn't more been made of the fact... Now, just let me finish. Collingwood kicked one goal in three quarters of football in a final series against another side. Why hasn't more been made of, not the fact that that happened so much, that has got nothing to do with football. How could you tell me that 18 players who are basically have the same talent or skill as the other 18 players they played against, whether you like that or not, that's about right. How could that side kick one goal in the elite competition of any sport in the world, but in Australia it's the elite sport, kick one goal in a final series in three quarters of football? Why hasn't more been made of the fact, a study on what those players did during the week? What was their mindset? How did that complacency or lack or lethargy spread over that side where you could kick one goal? I don't know why there's not been more made of that. Please, Donald.
I put it down to just one of those nights. And I played in a game, which was similar, 1975 grand final, where we were beaten, Hawthorn were beaten by North Melbourne. We'd won and finished on top of the ladder that year. And... came out on grand final day, we'd beaten them over that year, got into the final, and we could not do a thing right as a team, and I just put that down to Collingwood. They just had one of those nights.
And I can say I did too. In 1969, we've spoken about this, Richmond kicked 25 goals and we kicked 7 or 5.
Okay, well, you understand.
But Donald, one goal in three quarters of a football, John, in a game which, in a game now that is predicated on run and not so much football-oriented, it's about athletics and... they came from a great win over in Perth against the West Coast, had to travel back to the hub. It is extraordinary that someone hasn't done not an investigation as to why they failed, or the coach or the president or anything. Everyone's wanting to be sacked. Is just the human nature side of how a group of people can just not perform all at once is staggering.
Well, both of us have experienced that, and there's no explanation for it. It is just a fact of a sport or team sport, that some days you're on, and when you're really off, you are and there's nothing you can do as a team.
So that's my point. Why isn't there anything you can do as a team? And also, when you got beaten badly, and when we got beaten badly, our respective sides, I will venture to say at least you kicked a goal in each of the quarters, or you kicked 1-2 or 1-3, or not one goal, not one scoring shot in three quarters of football.
Well, in your game of football, you said you kicked 7 goals.
Five or seven, yep, I can't
remember.
Five
or seven, okay. Now, that was over. You had 25 minutes each quarter plus time on. So you would have played about 120 minutes of football. On the weekend, they'd played, what, quarter of an hour, quarters? That's an hour. They would have played for an hour. Now, you've played for twice, you know, nearly 2 hours, and you only kicked 5 or 7 goals.
There's not
much difference.
I'm not I'm not criticising Collingwood or the side.
Well, what are you saying then?
I'm saying it is a study in... You say not one person could have done anything about it. Why couldn't you have done anything about it? Why couldn't you have decided, I will stick on my man, or I will do something to try and change the course of the game? It was a fascinating game for that reason, that I've never seen such a one-sided game. And this is a finals game. This is not a home and away game between the top and the bottom side. It was extraordinary, and I think it is a great game to look back on and say, this is a tremendous insight into human behaviour and nature, and biorhythms and logarithms,
yeah,
and
all of that,
bloody
yeah.
psych and everything.
But the other thing that came out for me was the fact that it just proves that the 8 is made up for money. And it was instituted or originated from the fact of getting money for the AFL, because the 5th, 6th and 7th and 8th team didn't go through.
So
it's still out of the top 4 teams.
No, it's okay, Donald. So Collingwood... I would have given them a chance. I would have thought Collingwood fly over to Perth to play the West Coast Eagles. I tell you, you would just say the West Coast Eagles would summarily win that game, but Collingwood went over. It was a fantastic win, and they were buoyed by success. Geelong were smarting from a loss the week before. The difference in mental attitude, why that hasn't been studied, that is a greater reason to study people's minds than worry about the physical aspect of football.
And you're touching on it, mental attitude. Now, I watched Richmond the week before, and I made comment on the fact that when they lined up pre-game, Brisbane were very stony-faced, focused and whatever else. The Richmond team were laughing and had a smile on their face, not taking it seriously. This week, different team that came out for Richmond, they were all stony-faced, and they applied themselves. It's got to be played between the ears, football.
Okay.
And if you're not up to it mentally, you know, it's especially at this time of year, a coach doesn't have to. It's interesting, John, that when you're playing a grand final, the coach doesn't have to give an address.
That's correct.
The players can get themselves up.
Yes.
And, you know, all this other thing through the year of the coach addressing the team prior to the game and all the rest of it, if the players were really tuned in, you wouldn't need the coach to give a speech prior to the game.
Very good point, Donald. So just say the coach didn't, say Nathan Buckley didn't speak to that side before the game last week against Geelong, because you're using your analogy, the players will get themselves up. How can 18 players not get themselves up? If you were there, you wouldn't, and you've been criticised for this, and I was a bit the same, and Polly Farmer, not putting myself in the category of him, and not you either, but I just used to worry about how I played, and you get called selfish because of it, because your job was to do your job and let the rest of the people worry about how they go about it. Why couldn't those players get themselves up individually? At some stage after 5 minutes, they must have thought, hey, this is not going too well. We are so lethargic and we're so beaten for the ball. Let's do something to change something.
You've experienced, John. You were criticised of playing dead. Now, you were out there trying in the final.
Yep.
And the chairman of selectors criticised you or asked you the question, were you playing dead?
Yes.
Now, I experienced the same thing. No matter how you try, you're souped up, you're ready to go, but it just does not work on a particular day.
So Collingwood, during the national anthem, Donald, linked arms. They had their arms across each other's shoulders. Geelong, which stood at attention, didn't touch one another. Do you think that might have been the tactile fact of touching each other might have just swept through the pandemic, if you like, as opposed to Geelong, who were individuals and stolid and stony-faced? Do you think that, and I didn't notice anyone smiling, mind you, do you think that would be the difference, touching and not touching before the game at the national anthem?
I thought we were having an intelligent conversation until you just went off on your shit and you just...
Well, they didn't touch one another, Geelong.
What's that got to do with it?
Well, Collingwood did. They all hugged and embraced and... talk about stepping to the plate, if you like, if that old... I watched now, this is sport...
Did you watch football?
Go ahead.
Did you watch a game?
No. It was only two, wasn't there?
Yeah.
I didn't. Go on.
Okay.
Are you going to speak about the football?
No, I just asked a quick... I was just surprised that you'd watch a game. What did you watch?
Oh, I was about to tell you. This is one of those things I was about to tell you and suddenly you just interrupted with a completely obscure question about did I watch the football? This is about someone stepping to the plate. I watched a woman. A woman? She's a woman, a girl, lady, called Hannah Green. She won the best part of $1 million by winning... the LPGA, which is the ladies' professional golf, an LPGA tournament. She won. She lives in Perth. She's an Australian. Her father is a Maori called Tao from New Zealand, and her mother is Scottish. Not sure of her mother's name, Linda, I think. Anyhow, her parents, she's a lovely-looking girl, if we can say that. She's a lovely-looking girl, a woman, and she beat the world's best. And I tell you what, if you reckon the women are not too good at golf, the women are as good as the men at golf in relative terms, actually maybe better. Love watching the women's golf. She had to par the last hole.
What's her name?
Hannah Green, I said that.
Oh, did you? Sorry. Yep.
She had to win the last par the last hole. She hit her second shot into a bunker and she had to get it what's known as up and down. It was a pretty tough bunker shot. She hit her third shot to 6 feet and she had to put a putt in from 6 feet, not an easy putt, to win, I think, $1 million. And I thought, if ever you wanted to have some pressure put on you at a young age or any age at all, stand over a 6 foot putt and say, that's worth $1 million to you. And she stood over it and she looked at it and she stroked it and it went in the hole. And I thought, that is class, that is guts. Talk about the mental prowess to overcome adversity. You could not, and she was absolutely delighted. Her mum and dad were watching in Perth, I think it was 3 o'clock in the morning because it was over on the other side of the world. And she was so elated. I tell you, I almost, Donald, had a tear in the eye just from watching it. Just to think that you could do that when you had to. As opposed to, I put Sebastian Vettel, who was a Formula One driver for Ferrari, I put him in the category of Collingwood last week. He has gone from the penthouse to the shit house. He used to drive for Red Bull and won 5 world driving championships, 5 in a row, I think. Now he can't even get his car onto the can't get it into the second and third qualifying, or the first and second qualifying stages of a Grand Prix. He comes almost last or second last in a Ferrari, for God's sake. It is extraordinary how someone's mind can just disappear from the sport that they're good at, as opposed to Hannah Green, who was absolutely sensational.
Well, two things, and I'll ask you another question.
Four-time champ.
Four-time what?
He was a four-time champ, not a five-time champ.
Thank you.
Well, on Red Bull. Who cares? But no, would the fear factor would the fear factor come into it with regard to
Sebastian Vettel?
Yes. And then the other thing is, which I found interesting earlier on, you said that I don't know how you said women's golf is what not the equal, but
I did. In relative terms.
Yes. What do you mean by that to the men's game?
Well, so the men can hit the ball
a lot further.
But the women, for this is the biological difference between men and women, Don, which is what we're on about, about trans sport.
Yeah, anyway, get to the point.
No, well, I'm getting to the point, mate. They are fantastic sports people, sports women. They play the shots as well as the men, but they...
What, the short shots?
Every shot. Every shot. Every
but
shot.
But hang on. Hang on one moment.
They're just not as long.
They just don't hit the ball as long.
Yeah. No, of course they don't.
Do they play off? Excuse me. No. Do they play off the same markers?
No, they don't. They shorten the course in relative terms to be commensurate with the men's.
But
tour.
They'd have to in the short game. They'd have to be equally as good as the men. If it's 100-meter shot to the green, they can get there just as well as what
that's
and close.
What he's saying.
That's what I'm saying, Don.
What?
I'm saying he agrees with you.
That's what he's saying.
I'm saying exactly that. If they played with the men, they would be at a disadvantage only because the men's tees, when they hit off, are further back, and therefore, instead of hitting a pitching wedge to the green like the men do, they'd be hitting an 8 or a 7 iron.
Yeah, right.
So, but other than that, the power difference.
Okay, now I'm not a golfer. Can I ask you a question? The flexibility, when I've watched the women play, they seem far more supple and flexible when they're hitting the ball. Is that an advantage than the men? Is that an advantage?
Rhythm and timing would be an advantage, I would think. And
no, the flexibility, yes. They seem to swing through or far more supple.
They are, and that's the difference between the genders. I'm not.
But is it an advantage?
Well, raw power... can compensate for rhythm and flexibility, and that's the difference between someone like Bryson DeChambeau, who hits the ball on an average 380 yards.
Ah, 400 metres. 400.
Nearly. Sheesh. Not quite. 370. And the women hit it about, well, they hit it about 290, 280. So the difference is just... their power.
Mm.
So the men compensate for the power, the women compensate with their subtleness. Touch. Now you said
touch.
Yes. You said would it be fear about
Vettel.
Well, I would say the fear of Hannah Green standing over a 6 foot putt to win a minute. Just a minute. Standing over a 6 foot, the fear of missing that as opposed to the reflex and instinct required to drive a car at 300k round a circuit would be almost commensurate, would be almost the same as one another.
Oh, no, I think you're taking your life in your hands going at 300 clicks in a car. You could kill yourself.
But they don't now. They don't now these days, but...
But the fear factor's got to come into it.
Well, I'm just saying, I reckon fear as opposed to being scared about what's happened to your physical presence is about your... I'd say the fear of not putting a six-foot putt in to not win $1 million would far surpass the fear of driving a car at 300K. Mm. That's only one man's opinion, Donald. That's mine. Now,
did you realise the grand final's on this week?
I didn't realise it was on this week.
Netball.
Yes. Nice.
Melbourne Vixens.
No.
Perth Fever.
Give us your rundown. Just give us
I think it's going to be a great game. I watched Perth Fever last week, and I couldn't understand why one lady who was player of the match the week before, a 19-year-old girl called Sunday Ari Young, she played as a goal defender, I think, goalkeeper, didn't play this week.
Why didn't she?
That's what the question I ask. And the other question, why doesn't netball get the exposure that other sports does?
You're like a broken record.
It was on the main channel all this week.
I understand, but what about the paper? Did you know that Caitlin Bassett, who played for GWS, the Giants, why is she going to go to New Zealand to play in a second-rate competition? She's the goal shooter for Australia, plus the captain, yet she can't get a gig here in Australia. I understand a lot of the shooters are signed up on two-year contracts, but she's got to go to it. She's a captain of Australia.
So you said why...
But why doesn't this get exposure in the media so we understand what's going
on? It's a simple formula. This is not me saying this. This is how you know, and Rod would know better than anyone. This is how...
I don't want to say it.
What?
I just don't want to say it.
This well, is go how, on. So tell
well,
us
I'll
why.
I'll say it for him. You can I'll say it, and he can tell me if he agrees. It gets simple down. It simply gets down to the fact, will people watch mainstream sport or second tier sport, and it's a ratings thing? If will they watch it, and is it exciting, and is it captivating for people to watch? And as soon as netball grabs the interest of the general community sports wise, they will play it at prime
this
time.
Is the
is
best
that right, Rod?
Yeah, it's about the level of interest, as simple as that.
That's like, it.
This and is the best competition in the world here in Australia right now. You've got international players being recruited and played here. It's a women's sport, and we're all into giving women the opportunity and the exposure in a sport. Now, here is something that is a women. It's not football that men play, but
okay.
This is solely played by women.
So, yeah, so as a result of you saying this, Donald, you might entice people to watch it, and eventually when surveys are done and ratings come out, they say, wow, this sport is taking off, and that it will supersede sports that people don't watch. It's
maybe
just
you,
predicated
you guys
on ratings.
Okay, well, you guys probably don't realise, but they've put a two-point circle around. No, so, well, you've seen it, right? Well, there was a girl, Alice Teague-Neal, on the weekend playing for Perth, and it just added another dimension. I'm a traditionalist and I didn't like it, but it just added another dimension. She was shooting at two-pointers, whereas everyone else is a one-point in netball, but, God, it made it really exciting, and it brought another skill into the game that you had to shoot from a fair way out, like a three-pointer in basketball.
What was the score in the end? That was a blowout when I heard
it. It was a real blowout. They just blitzed them. Perth just blitzed them. Got away. The interceptions by the Perth girls cutting the
like
passes off. They just blitzed them.
So you just said he's a traditionalist. Do you realize?
I'm a traditionalist.
Yes. Well, then you said someone else was. Do you realize that a couple of football coaches have been sacked in the States because they said they are right into social messages and social justice, but they are not for putting political messages on football fields or putting them on the jumpers of the people who play or the Guernseys. And I'm speaking about Black Lives Matter. The bloke said he's quite happy with the slogan and it's a great sentiment. He said, but the minute that has been now plastered over the ground and put on the jumpers and the apparel of people playing the sport, he says because he pushed back on that, two coaches have been sacked for saying they shouldn't have BLM, Black Lives Matter, slogans on the ground or the jumpers.
He said, he then went on to say, I believe in all lives matter, which is a patronising thing to say in response to Black Lives Matter, because the issues that relate that we're protesting against don't happen to all people. That's what the problem is with saying all lives matter. So we're trying to get people to accept the reason, you know, what the, I guess the slogan, let's forget about the political party that it's aligned to and all sort of stuff, but the slogan is a good one, which is Black Lives Matter, okay?
He said that.
Yeah, no, he said all lives matter. That's the problem. He came back and said, all lives matter. He said, oh, and it upsets Christian values and the family unit and all that sort of stuff. And he said, we've got to stop all this and just get on with it. He was a dinosaur and he had to go because he wasn't setting a good example in his community. He was a college football coach, Don. Sam said at one point, it was when we first had this argument, he said he was an NBA coach.
I said he was a basketball coach, yep.
So what we had this conversation.
I know, that is just an extraordinary thing you say. About he said, and I say, and we all say, that the Black Lives Matter slogan, if you like, is very valid. And who doesn't think that? How can it be offensive? Because I think it's been manufactured that Black Lives Matter. If you say all lives matter, it's been manufactured that that's just not inclusive or whatever. How can a simple statement like that cause a furor if you say in the first place, of course it's sensible to say Black Lives Matter? Who doesn't agree with that? But if you say it shouldn't be on a court or on the back of people's jumpers because it's we don't want to politicise sport per se, how can you get sacked for saying that? Because they ramp up, they have activists that ramp up, they want the cancel culture and they want to drive you out of town because they want to put their point of view, they don't want to listen to yours. Yours is okay as long as it agrees with theirs. Is that fair, Rodney?
No, because to say all lives matter in response is offensive and patronising. Because it's like me coming to you and saying, Sam, I've got a problem. You know, blah, 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 blah. You know, and you say, hey, mate, we've all got a problem. I mean, how does that help?
How does that make sense, what you just said?
Well, because what you're trying, you're not listening is what I'm trying to say. Just dismiss it to say, oh, mate, all lives matter. No, but these things that these people are protesting don't happen to all people. You know, things like, you know, well, clearly racism only happens to people of colour, okay? I mean, and that's what they're...
It seems to happen to minority.
And essentially, let's just forget about all the stuff that you're going to go on about the looting and stuff. They're protesting racism, okay? And racism only happens to minorities and people of colour, right? Mm. So to just come back and say all lives matter, that's horribly dismissive and patronising.
But that just gets hijacked, that is a manufactured statement to say that all lives matter is offensive. If you concede that Black Lives Matter and that is a very worthy thing to say, and who doesn't agree with that? For God's sake, if you don't agree with that, then how can you say all lives matter?
But put yourself in their shoes, okay? You're trying to protest, okay, about an issue. You're trying to get awareness. You're trying to get some traction. And if you don't, if you just say all lives matter and you don't listen, okay, so that
but it, the black was listening.
Well, hang on, just go back a step. Just go back and think about the fact that you're not, you feel like you haven't been listened to, okay? Because someone just comes back and says, "Hey, mate, all lives matter." That's dismissive. And if you don't listen, that's the reason why protests continue, because they want to be heard. If somebody actually, i.e., the president, actually said, "I hear you, I'm going to help," you know what? There probably wouldn't be a need for protests. And he doesn't. He never said that. He came out and instead he held a Bible up in front of the church and, you know, shot tear gas everywhere to get everybody away.
He's an evangelical. He's allowed to have, in the First Amendment, which is the right to free speech, he's allowed to have that opinion without being told what he must...
Are you two getting off the topic of sport?
Yes, correct.
Well, that's sport. It's about painting slogans on the ground.
It started as sport and now you digressed into something else, which is general.
Well,
have you ever been on a committee? No. Have you ever been on a committee? It just fascinated me the last couple of weeks. We've got the state, you know.
No.
Politics, what's happening in Victoria, elected, you know, the democratic process for committees. We've got state politics. Why are the Labor Party, the people in power in Victoria now, going and not representing their constituents in the right way? Why is there a lack of transparency? And these things seem to run right through communities.
Is this sport?
It is sport. It is sport. And mainly...
Should be good.
Mainly committees...
Weasel listen to sport.
Mainly committees related to sport. That people are elected democratically, but once they get in, they consider it a position and transparency goes out the door and they're more worried about the position or where they want to take this particular organisation and not considering what the people want. Now, I'll give you a couple of classic examples you might relate to. One is Hawthorn, right at the moment.
Oh, right.
Jeff Kennett sent a letter out to the members wishing that... And this is how they've manipulated the committee. Two committee people have resigned. The elections are in December. He's put two people on, expertise in construction or whatever their particular field is. Then he's put down his... What I can
preference.
Say... Not preferences, but yes, they would like, you know, ask that the board to consider these people. So, in other words, other people have been discouraged. Well, haven't as yet. Well, they have been discouraged because he said that he had been approached by others wishing to get on the committee, but they were discouraged.
Jeff,
but now Jeffrey, he believes that the Hawthorn board. Now listen to this.
I'm listening, Don. I'm trying to just piece it together.
The aims of the Hawthorn board. One, number one, he considers the most important thing: good governance.
Yes.
Second, welfare of the employees.
Yes.
Third, financial strength.
Yes.
And fourth, football. Success. I've got arthritis and I just can't move that other thumb.
Oh, you've got arthritis. Yes.
Sorry, what was the fourth one?
The fourth one was football success.
Yes. Shouldn't that be first?
Thank you.
Well,
Rodney.
Did he put him in order?
No, I put them in his order. And fourth is football success.
No,
now, should this man be running a football club? I thought when you, whether you form a tennis club, in a competition, put it, or a pennant golf team, you go out there to win. You go out to win the whole competition.
John, please, man, in your naivety, he is spot on. If you don't have the right structure, the right governance, the right welfare, the people who represent you, the right overall structure of the board, then the rest you may as well throw out. The success of a football club starts in the top office. The rest is a given. If you can't
play the football,
it's still all to ultimately achieve football success, isn't it?
That's number one should be football success.
Maybe welfare. Maybe the welfare one. You can't...
What?
No, you shouldn't be sending people out injured to win a football match, perhaps, is what he's saying.
No, you don't... It's the person's decision to go out and play football.
Well, all right, okay, but you can't...
Football...
Welfare,
I mean,
maybe.
The organisation, whatever the organisation is, whether it be whatever... You know, in a football club, it is success. Football success. The rest of it looks after itself.
No, it doesn't.
It does. If you don't aim for success on a football field, the rest of it doesn't.
Maybe not.
Where
welfare,
do you reckon?
Concussions and all that sort of stuff.
What's that got to do with...
shouldn't send a bloke out because you might lose.
That's the football
regardless
welfare.
Of
but that's a decision made by the coaching panel in selecting
that's
the team.
Because you're asking them to put his welfare first.
Beg your pardon?
Because you're asking a doctor and a coach to put the player's welfare first ahead of the
Which
win.
They do do.
So that puts welfare first.
No.
Boys,
you've missed the point.
I'll tell you, Don, a side that was the strongest side around when we were playing.
Which was?
Well, not the strongest, but was one of the five marquee sides in the competition, the Essendon Football Club, have never recovered and probably will take another decade to recover from the bad governance of the drug saga, the bad governance of the welfare of the players, the bad governance of the, what was the third thing you mentioned there?
Finances.
Shot to bits, and the football is incidental. If they had got those first three things right, the football on-field performance would not be where it is today. And they have that is a classic case of what you were mentioning about how those things are in order.
But that's a good example of putting football ahead of welfare.
Well, I come from another direction because I hold the Essendon Committee up of the 1980s as what a football committee should be.
That's what
they
I
had
said.
Product not the 80s. They had product knowledge as well as business expertise.
I think
it's become very insular football, and they don't look outside, especially at Hawthorn. And
fair dinkum, I just said that, Don. Essendon were the power side. Now they are in a shambles because of those first three things you mentioned on there they didn't adhere to. Why don't you go for the board of Hawthorn then and stand?
That is a good point.
I
have sat on the board and...
Were you good?
No, I was a one out.
Well, that's all right.
That's standard for you, isn't it, Don?
Well, yeah. It is standard, but what I saw, I saw in my time at Hawthorn as a player, people who did stand were discouraged not to stand. One fellow did stand, Frank Lacey, against the president's wishes and got on. And whilst I was on the board, a chap wanted to stand, which was his right, but the president went and saw him and he finished up as an employee of the club, paid off in that way.
Who was... Can
now,
you
don't
tell?
You... I'm not...
We can work it out ourselves.
I've got enough problems as it is, but I can tell you that these boards lack transparency once they get in and they set their own agenda. Is it for the betterment of the organisation? Yes, John.
So, Don.
Yes, John.
So,
Well, he put his hand up.
That's right. I didn't want to interrupt in case you said, wait a minute. Don't let me finish. And I said, put my hand up and say, no, no. You always raise your voice when you don't want me to interrupt. You say, yes, and the club, let me finish. Now, Don, I say I'm interviewing you. Come in. Sit down, Don. I'm interviewing you for a committee position at the Hawthorn Football Club. Hello, Don. Sit down. How are you today? Go along with this.
Well, we wouldn't be doing an interview number one because Don, I would be appealing to the members to vote me in.
Don, please just go along with this.
No, I'm not going to. Why? You just
because I'm getting to it. Just say I'm a member. Well, say I'm. You're trying to woo me as a voter, and I'm interviewing you in my office somewhere. Nothing to do with football. Hello, Don. Come in. Sit down. How are you today?
Good, thanks. Right, I keep going.
Yeah. Now, Don, I see you're standing for committee of the Hawthorn Football Club. Could you tell me what is the main plank in your platform? What is your main driving...
Well, that's exactly right.
I haven't asked the question, Don. What is the main driving force for you wanting to be a member? What is your priority, please, Don, before I get my vote?
I preempted the end.
Go ahead.
I haven't got the issue. I cannot think off the top of my head right now the issues. Otherwise, I would be standing.
I thought you preempted it.
No, it's not a case. It's not a
main important.
No, because I am not standing. If there were issues, I would stand.
You said there are issues.
I don't agree with that. There's a lack of transparency once people become the democratic process, and then once they get in, like the state government right now, we've got it in the equestrian world. Hey, listen, I'm involved in the equestrian world, and there's problems going on there now. The dynamics within and the lack of transparency. What is it about people once they get on committees that they shore up their position?
I'm not letting this go, Don. I'm going to do this again. You've just given the things that you are disappointed with. Now I'm going to start this again. Thank you, Don. You want my vote. What is it, your main priority?
So what are we going for? Which position? What are we going for?
You're going for the board.
The board. Hawthorn, right
the
now.
Committee.
Right now.
Yes.
So okay, this is a role play, Don. Go ahead. Go along with it.
This is off the top of my head without any
study. That's so good. It is for
okay,
it is for
number you one just is said. Number one is transparency.
What about football?
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
What happened to football?
Seriously, Don. You just belted Kennett for saying... You said you belted Kennett for saying those three things supersede the football. And I asked you what's your main priority and you said transparency. What about the fucking football? You were on about it. You were banging on about it. You said you can't think. You can't think. I'm interviewing you for a position.
You want an informal discussion.
I'm interviewing you for a position on the board. What is your main priority?
Well, it's football success. But if I was... Listen, what I am trying to say is there is a lack of transparency in every committee.
Meaning? Oh. You can't see through what?
Everything is not... The things are not disclosed.
Like what?
Well, what's happening at the moment with regard to the government and coronavirus?
Now, I'm talking about the Hawthorn Football Club.
Okay, but you it's in politics, it's in various forms... It's in various forms.
No, why don't you shout at him? He's speaking to the microphone. Why don't you shout at him? Don, please, man. I wish Ben Fordham was on the line. Kenneth said governance. What were the other three things, please? Go on.
Welfare.
Let's not just focus on Hawthorn, please.
Well, you focused on them. You said they're coming up.
What about Essendon? They're doing exactly the same. Okay, Essendon are doing exactly the same thing by putting Sheedy on. They've asked a lady to resign. Sheedy comes on, faces the election in December. Do you think the members are not going to vote for Sheedy? He is a name. They are orchestrating the committee. Whoever is the power at Essendon is orchestrating the committee in such a way that they get their way.
That's what happens now all the time. The CEOs half the time now appoint the
Get
any scrutiny.
Well, it's interesting to know where how the dynamics work and who's doing what or pulling which string. Is it the chief or is it the president or who is the power breaker at these organisations?
You just said let's not talk about Hawthorn.
I'd rather have an intelligent conversation with Rodney than instead of you.
Do you know why you don't want to have a conversation with me?
Because you are limited.
Because I am asking you, I am asking you, Donald, to speak from a position of logic. You said...
Oh, no, listen...
You said that Jeff Kennett has brought out a, if you like, manifesto. No,
listen, let's get off the subject because you are pernickety and you give me the shit sometimes.
You said Kennett has brought out a manifesto about what he would like Hawthorn to be in this order: governance, player welfare, finance and football. I'm saying that is exactly the order in which a committee should operate.
Well, I'm saying it should be football success number one.
So how do you get it?
You have got to be good at the draft. Then other things have got to come into play. The culture and environment.
Culture, that's governance.
And environment.
That's player welfare.
Okay.
Staff welfare, he said. So it's everyone.
And finance, that's to buy the
welfare
players.
Welfare of employees.
Yep, that's to buy the players, look after the culture.
So if the club had good governance, had welfare of employees, paramount, financial strength, and didn't have football success.
But one goes with the other, Donald. You can't have football success without the other three.
Does it?
Yes.
Well, I was on the board when we had those three and we didn't have football success.
You had good governance?
Yes.
And what's that mean?
What years were you on the board?
Oh, 96 to about...
What does that mean?
2000 and something, I don't know.
So good governance?
You were like busted asses back then, didn't you?
Yeah, we were finishing on the bottom each year, but we were still making a profit each year. We had financial strength.
Maybe you got on the board.
Everybody...
Maybe you got on the board, Donald.
I don't think you're in a position to talk about whether there was good governance. Good thing you're on the board.
Oh, you idiot.
No, but Don, to your credit, maybe you got on the board because the club wasn't headed in the right direction.
Because of Operation Payback.
Oh, I see. So it was just a payback deal for you, just a sweetheart deal, not on your merits. It was inclusive. You were just a statistic.
Token.
You were a token, were you? So you got on not through any form of prowess or any expertise. You just got on as a suck job, did you?
And you being on a committee, you'd know all about the dynamics within or in a committee.
Don, I've never been to the moon, mate, but I know it's there. You don't have to be on a committee to know how a committee works.
And how does a committee work?
You have to be on a committee to know
I think
how
you have
works.
To have been on one before to sort
Not
of know
at
it.
At all.
Yeah.
You have to be able to speak logically and sensibly to the people
and
you are on with.
And you don't think there are groups within that committee?
Factions.
Yeah.
Well, maybe there are, but what's that mean? What's that matter? If you are competent enough, it's like you said, unless you've been to the university, you can't be married to someone who's an idiot.
When Don was on the board, the factions were him and everybody else.
You are right.
So
they were all wrong, you were right.
So Don, just moving on to
moving on to more
salacious things, I noticed the Western Bulldogs, they have come into a... There's been reports that they've gone off the tracks after their exit to the finals. A man dressed up as Evel Knievel and jumped into a pool. I'm not sure why that's why is that so newsworthy? Is that new, or if
because
I
they're
that?
In the hub with they're still in a hub with teams that are playing.
Yeah, and what's that? If they're in a hub, they can't spread the virus.
Well, an end-of-season party.
Yeah, but they can't spread the virus if they're in the hub because they haven't
it's
got
not it. About the virus.
No, it's not about the virus. It's about upsetting the two teams that were there preparing for the final.
What's the matter? They can prepare for the final.
Collingwood and Richmond.
Richmond, because that was when this happened.
And the Footscray players were sharing the same resort. Yes. They had an end-of-season party. Which were maybe noise-wise got out of hand.
What, and they were the players...
Allegedly.
Allegedly
got out of hand.
Well, players still in the competition said, oh, there's too much noise and we can't sleep and stop shouting and playing music. Are you serious?
I am serious and I would be complaining too if I was preparing for a game on the Saturday.
Well, this is good governance, isn't it?
What?
The AFL come down and say, hey... Boys, desist.
I think there's a bigger question. Do you think it was just noise that was going on?
As opposed to what? Alcohol and drug taking and all? Where would they get all that from? I don't know. What are you talking about?
Well, they're in a hub. They can't get out.
What are you saying, Don? That there was fraternisation with...
noise is not a problem.
Noise was the problem, according to...
Do you think it was just noise? What are you alluding to?
Wag.
Mm. What are you alluding to?
I think a lot of stories haven't come out of the hub.
I think a lot of stories are being made up. I think
they've been made up or covered over.
No, invented.
And Damien Barrett said that he wasn't allowed to. This is not criticising him. He said there was a written thing that the press weren't allowed to mention what goes on in the hub because they don't want controversy and salacious stories.
Isn't that what I just said?
Yes.
A lot of things have been covered up.
Yes, that's what I said it for. So what did you mean that there was more than noise going on?
Well, I just said it. I think a lot of things have been covered up.
Okay. What do you think's been covered up? Salacious activity. Someone said there were hookers.
What?
Hookers. They said hookers were...
Who said that?
Someone said that. They said that there were prozzies.
Turn up.
Prozzies coming in. How can prozzies come into the hub? How can prozzies come into the hub? They'd have to go into quarantine. or you get vaginal spray all over the people in the front row. Oh, no, that was made up, that wasn't it?
All of it was.
That was all made up.
Well, it's interesting too, the kind of blaming the hubs too for their performances, aren't they, some of the teams?
Well, so they wouldn't, Geelong and Richmond wouldn't be blaming the hub.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. You know, when you had Simon O'Donnell sitting here saying that cricketers aren't tough enough and Justin Langer looking for toughness in his team, you know, you've got to be tough to... You're mentally tough. You've got to overcome the same problems. And if it's a hub, the problem, you've just got to overcome it.
Now, Don, I want to ask you this before we finish. I want to ask you these two questions. Wouldn't it be interesting to go to the people who selected Collingwood to beat Geelong? And I'm not criticising them because I might have done that myself. And ask them on what basis did they think Collingwood would beat Geelong, which shows you just how much worth tipping is. Because I could have tipped Collingwood to beat Geelong. How would you know? It's just it's just a window dressing tipping. It means nothing. And who do you think will win out of the next two games, Donald? Do you think?
Number one is I don't know who's going to win.
Correct.
But the team that I'm hoping...
Brisbane.
Is Brisbane Lions.
Do you think they'll beat Geelong?
I think they will.
Right. So logically, this is not a criticism, Donald. I couldn't probably agree with you. Logically, you couldn't say after last week that Brisbane would beat Geelong, could you?
What, because of Geelong's performance?
Yes.
I would say yes, you can beat Geelong.
They'll have a letdown.
No. There's a different set of players come in, different circumstance. Oh, yes. And there's different players playing for Brisbane who are better than the Collingwood players too. And there's a different mindset at Brisbane.
How do you know?
Well, I watched them last week against...
Were they laughing?
No. They had great resolve.
Great resolve.
And when they chased, the players were running out of camera and actually laying tackles and applying tackles.
Brisbane
so
to
they
beat
were
Geelong.
Very intent on the defensive
Brisbane
side of the
Brisbane to beat Geelong and...
The other side, no, okay.
What?
Yeah, you've just triggered my thought.
Oh, no, have I?
Yes, because watching the game, you don't watch it. Do you realise how many commentators, do you listen to the commentary? I just turn it down now. There are six commentators, all putting their point of view forward. You just I've certainly become immune to what they're saying.
Yes.
I think there's too many. All you need is a game being called and maybe a commentator or a special commentator telling you something that you don't see that's off camera.
I think it's difficult with people in different places.
What do you mean?
Yeah, what do you mean?
Why have so many of them?
What do you mean they're not all there? They're watching it on the television. Why is that hard?
Well, because Bruce is in Adelaide.
It's easier.
Bruce is in Adelaide. You've got some of the guys sitting here in Melbourne office, and then you've got some people at the Gabba. Or
they're watching
wherever.
The same game on the screen.
You don't have the ability to just put your hand on somebody's lap to say, I'm going to come in here.
Why do you need so many
opinions
on the game?
Many doing it.
I think they want to have all bases covered. I just think
all
it's a different...
All bases. Everyone's got to justify their position.
I think it will settle. I think it's a matter of just trying out things and whatnot.
There's too many people involved.
Rocket Rod. Ever listened
what?
Too many? He says people trying out things. been doing it all their life.
Why no, they haven't been doing it in a COVID environment. This is new.
Oh, they're watching it off the screens. Far easier to make a comment off the screen than watching the whole ground.
But in the meantime, you've got another commentator trying to talk in Adelaide. You've got another commentator trying to talk from the gallery.
Too many commentators is what I'm saying.
The producer saying, be quiet. We only want one.
Another voice. Another voice. It's difficult.
Oh, difficult, my ass.
I'm glad Abby Holmes is also wearing correct footwear too. She came on 3 weeks ago wearing high heels, spike high heel shoes, walking across the ground, the grass ground.
Were you just now damaging wearing, the ground, was it?
No, she was getting bogged.
Oh, bogged.
Yes, now she's wearing she have flat, to wear, row, flat sports to wear, shoes.
See, we all learned. Beg your pardon? Learned. It all settles down. She everything
to,
settles
she
down.
Looked like to, she was going to the spring carnival.
She'll have to wear chains on her shoes.
Sam, can you tell
like
us a story?
She's up the snow.
Can you tell us a story about how your commentary career came to an end?
What?
Oh, yeah.
At Triple
you
M? No, not on
you
air,
that
you
before.
Haven't.
Yeah, I have.
No, you haven't. Not on air.
Well, you could play it one day.
Really?
Yeah, it's on YouTube or something.
It's all very.
No, you know that.
I don't know.
He got the ask. He said this game sorry, is shit ass.
Excuse me, I didn't get the ask.
Well, he got moved. Okay,
I
that's
did
the
not.
Clever, that's
I
the
did,
interesting part of the story.
I didn't get the
that's
ask
the interesting
at
part
all.
Of the story.
Look, hang on, be quiet.
Just tell us about how it came to an end. Then let's not worry about the fact that because let's be honest.
Right. Oh, I was doing one of these people doing special comments. I was doing them with someone else.
Triple M.
Yeah, I was doing with Triple M, but I was doing with, I don't know, there was me and I don't know who was calling the football. I don't know. And I'd been to 3 games. I was filled in for someone, went on Friday, sat down, I was filling in on Sunday and Geelong were playing someone and I was a bit emotionally involved with Geelong and they were playing shocking football and it was a shocking game, one of those games you... And I said, that's probably the worst game I've ever seen. It was just no skill, no talent in it. It was umpired badly. I said, the scores were low. I said, honestly and truly, I said, no, they're going to put up with much more of this. And so we do talk back. Welcome to the line. Now we've got Billy from Bayswater. Billy rang in and he said, I thought it was a pretty good game, Sam. I don't know where you were. And I said, were you at the game? And Billy said, yeah, I was at it. I said, well, you're a fuckwit.
What?
And I was doing with Brian Taylor. Brian went, oh, Bill. And I said, oh, well, fair dinkum. I said, seriously, I don't know if you've set me up. I said, but if you want to get me to go off, get someone like silly fucking Billy to ring in again. And so that was it. So
the station came down on you?
No, I got called into the office, Gary Pert, who was station manager. And he said, Sam, I said, oh, no, Gary, I shouldn't have said he's a fuckwit. He said, look, I said I was happy to resign or leave. No, he said, we don't want you to resign or leave. He said, what we'd like you to do is just go to the games and when they start, go home. Do the 12 till 2, the preamble, and then when the games go home. Start. When the games start, just go home.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, okay, Gaz, would there be a diminution in pay? He said, no. He said, you can just... I said, really? So I don't have to go to the games and you're not going to dock my pay and you're not going to cancel me? And he said, no. I said, shit, eh? I said, I should have told someone to get fucked 3 years ago. I'd still be here doing this and not watching the games. That'd be a bonus. That'd be a win-win. Anyhow, he would confirm that. That's true. Now, we finished. This is talking about...
Well, I watched the Ruckman again. I know it's a bane, but they're starting to jump early again. They did it on Collingwood and Geelong.
Very good.
And the holding at
Why jumping early a problem?
Because they're a little bit frightened of making body contact.
That's what Sam used to do.
No, but he made contact and jumped at the right time. These guys are jumping a mile too early and the intent is not the ball. There is a fine line unless you've played or know the intent. He jumped with the intent of taking the man out, but he did a little bit more subtly. These guys are very unsubtle in the way that they go about doing it. They got no eyes for the ball. In fact, they don't even like making body contact. And the other thing is this holding. They're like sumo wrestlers at a boundary throw-in, literally bear-hugging one another.
I never understand why they let that go.
Why they let it go.
I know why they don't clamp down on that. Just say you cannot make contact until you jump for the ball.
The other one is Brody Grundy. Apparently he's on 800,000. He's had a bad year. You just wonder whether he's playing with injury or whether he's become, when a lot of athletes, like the hungry boxer, receives a big paycheck and they never go on, they're not as hungry.
Oh.
You wonder whether Brody Grundy is as hungry as what he was?
Don, you...
Or is he carrying an injury? Because he certainly hasn't lived up to his 800,000.
Well, if you're telling me someone like anyone but Brody Grundy, who would be getting 800,000 if you say, it would not be hungry for his own personal pride and interest in being good himself, please don't say he's not hungry and he wouldn't be giving it his best. He would be either injured or there'd be something else going on with Brody Grundy. No one would go out there and play half-heartedly if the hope of the side was vaguely on them.
I'm not suggesting that.
You were.
But he's not... What?
You were saying that he's not hungry.
He's not up to his 800,000. He's not playing anywhere near what he played the year before.
That's not because he mightn't be hungry. That could be for a whole lot of reasons. Injury, illness.
Keep going for the whole year.
He might be
injury. He could be carrying
psychological
something.
Problem. He might be out of form and depressed, but he might be trying very hard and not have lost interest, but wondering how he can recapture something of what he had, Donald. Now
you haven't. Hang on. No. You haven't told us who's going to win the other game.
Richmond and Port.
Richmond.
Yes, just because you think they should.
I think they got a sting in the tail.
Yes.
And mentally they're on the ball now.
So Geelong, Richmond and Brisbane to play in
the... No, hang on, that's goof. That game's being played in Adelaide, isn't it?
Mm. Oh.
And winning form is good form.
Mm. Well, Collingwood beat West Coast over in Perth.
Yeah, don't worry about that.
Oh, don't worry about that. Why not?
Very good game.
You got no idea, like we don't.
Okay, I'll still go for Richmond.
Of course you will, Don.
And I'll go for Brisbane to beat Geelong.
Okay, good on you. Now, this just shows you how you can oversell yourself in a lot of things. And a friend of mine told me that this guy went for a job as a chef because the restaurants are opening up. Did you know that there? And he walked in and he said, "I'm after a job as a chef." This is just how you can just overdo yourself. And he walked in and he said to the boss, he said, "Look," he said, "I'm after a job as a chef." And then Blake said, "Okay." He said, "Can you fry an egg?" He said, "Oh, of course I can fry an egg." He said, "Show us." So the bloke took an egg out of the carton, threw it up, bounced it onto the back of his heel, kicked it onto the top of his head. The egg hit his head. He bowled it down onto his forearm. It dropped into the pan. The egg hit the side of the frying pan. It broke open. The yolk went into the pan and the shell dropped into the bin underneath. The bloke said, "Shit," he said, "that's unbelievable."
Yeah.
He said, "Show us that again, will you?" And the bloke said, "Yeah, sure." So he took the egg out, threw it up, onto the head, onto the shoulder, onto the arm, kicked it back up with his heel onto his forehead and headbutted it into the frying pan. The shell hit the side of the frying pan, broke open, dropped into the bin and the yolk into the pan. And the boss said, "That is absolutely fucking amazing." The guy said, "Do I get the job?" He said, "No, you fuck about too much."
I'm hoping around the streets late at night. I'm worried because you ain't treating me right. Come back again. I'm just crazy about you, baby.